Welcome to VIP of the Month Spotlight for October 2019. In the spotlight this month is our very own webmaster, Barry Jennings from Canada. Now, here is our host, Teresa Rose.
Welcome, everyone. We're going to get started here in just a few minutes, but a few housekeeping rules before we do get started. Most of you know the drill, but we'll go over it quickly. After the interview, I will open up the mic for members to ask Barry any questions that they wish. He does have the right to decline to answer any question if he chooses. Please remember to key up one at a time. Let him answer the question before the next person keys up, please. And with that, we are going to get started. Welcome, everyone, to this month's VIP of the month of October, and I am very proud that we have our own webmaster, Barry Jennings, as the VIP of the month. Welcome, Barry.
Oh, thank you, Teresa. It's wonderful to be here.
And let me introduce you. It's Barry Jennings. He was born September 26, 1950, and he lives in Edmonton, Canada. And again, thank you so much, Barry, for agreeing to be the VIP of the month. I have been looking so forward to doing this interview.
I look forward to it as well.
Okay, first, Barry, tell us a little bit about where you were born and raised.
I was born right here in Edmonton, actually, although I spent most of my adult life elsewhere. I was born here, not too far away, and I grew up, the first few years I grew up here, it was interesting because I know in the first few years it was I didn't even understand the fact that I was blind. I guess it was I had a blind sister who also she still lives on the coast, and so it was a nice easy first few years, I would say. Good family, good home. We moved once while I was before I went to school, and so it was I enjoyed my first few years.
All right, Barry, tell us a little bit about your parents, what they did for a living, and tell us if you have sisters and brothers.
My mother worked part time. At various shoe stores. She worked at a store called Woodward's, which is no longer in business. It was a department store, and she worked for one or two other places in the shoe department, waiting on customers. And my dad, the earliest job I remember him having was working for a dairy. Delivering milk, and in those days they actually did that, and then he eventually worked for a place called Alberta Giftwares, which was another place. So he got to be an assistant manager, and he had several jobs throughout his life. So that was our family.
Okay, tell us about brothers and sisters.
I have two sisters. The oldest one now is a nurse. Or actually, she's retired now, but she was a nurse. The second one, she has raised a family of her own, and she lives on the coast. My younger brother, lives here, which was part of the reason why we came here, actually, came back here to Edmonton.
Okay, interesting. Two sisters and a brother, and you already said that one of the sisters was visually impaired, so we'll get into that in just a few minutes. Barry, were you born blind, or did you go blind later in life?
No, I was born blind. In the early years, I had a little bit of light perception, and I could sort of make out objects, but I couldn't tell you what they were. They were just forms in front of me. So it helped me guide a little bit, but other than that, not much different from the way it is now. Now I can't see at all.
Okay, and what is the name of your eye condition, and is it the same eye condition your sister has?
Yes, it was actually never really given. We were actually never given an official diagnosis, but it is a retina situation. A retina that's wasn't fully formed, so that's the issue. And both of us have that.
Now, I am assuming that the sister that has the same eye condition is your sister that has a family of her own and not the RN. Is that correct?
Well, both of them had children. Some of them are adopted. The oldest one had two that were adopted because she found she couldn't have them. The second one was adopted, and the other two are her own. So, that's it. The oldest sister, as I say, worked as an RN for a good part of her adult life.
Barry, while you were growing up, were you treated differently because of your eye condition, or with your sister already being visually impaired, did that kind of pave the way for you?
Not really. In fact, the thing I always remember when I was, especially after we moved into our second house, the first house we were in was my father's father had owned it, and he died during the Second World War, so I never met him. I never met either of the grandparents on my father's side. And they, we moved into a new house in the middle 50s. And then I started to get wander to the point where I could wander around. The neighborhood was quite easy to get around, and in those days, people didn't worry about as much about where their kids were as they do today. As long as you were home by supper time, everything was fine. And so when I was 5 or 6 years old, I was, in the summertime at least, I'd be out there a good part of the day playing with my friends. And in those kind of the neighborhood, most parents knew. There were always a stay-at-home parent saw at just about every house in those days. And so the neighborhood, the whole neighborhood look out for you. So I actually had quite a bit of freedom for a kid that age.
So hanging out with your friends and so forth, did they treat you differently because of your vision? Because from what you said, you only had light perception then, which was not a lot of vision. So were you treated differently?
No, not really. It was pretty normal. I didn't really have any sense of any kind of difference being blind until I was till I went away to school, but the kids that I hung out with mostly were around my age, and they treated me pretty much like their other friends, other than the fact that they understood that I couldn't see, and once in a while if they saw that I needed help with something, they would help, but there was nothing Not much difference, I would say.
And it sounds like your parents were pretty lenient with you. They didn't coddle you and make you stay in because of that. They gave you your freedom.
Yeah, they didn't worry about me too much, and I was always grateful for that. The first few years, they say the first few years of your life they are very formative for a child, and so they let me have a little bit of independence. You know, it was in those days you could do that because like I say, the whole neighborhood was watching out for the kids. So I was just like other kids. You know, I would ride my little tricycle up and down the street and play with the kids and do the things that kids do, you know, playing and building a fort or doing a, you know, it was in those days, play for kids was cowboys and Indians type stuff. Not something that you would see today. We were a little less politically correct, among other things.
Yeah, kids today hold an iPod or sit at a computer. They don't know how to play cowboys and Indians. Barry, when you were a kid, maybe before going to school, because we haven't gotten to school yet, tell us one thing that you feel like was hard for you to overcome, or was there anything?
I never thought about that too much. Not really much. Those first few years were pretty happy. You know, I guess I have to say that there wasn't too much that I was worried about back then. I think maybe when the winter came and the snow was on the ground and everything, I had a little more trouble than most other kids figuring out where, every blind person knows what it's like trying to navigate when there's a foot of snow on the ground.
Well, I've never experienced a foot of snow, but even just a few inches visually impaired really bothers me. Barry, tell us, were you mainstream school or did you go to the school for the blind?
School for the blind for 12 years.
Okay, tell us a little bit about the school for the blind. I'm sure you went in first grade, kindergarten.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, it was a little different than what you experienced in the U.S. We have a smaller population, and that means that we get the school. The school was far away. We had two schools I think there were three schools. One in the, was it three or was it four? It was actually, there were four if you count this Montreal. So there was the one in Vancouver that I would have gone to had I been a year later, which is closed now. There was the one in Brantford where I went. Well, now that's, we're talking, in terms of distance, we're talking, think about Denver to Buffalo, that kind of distance. It's quite far. So as a result, I only got home during the Christmas holidays for a couple of weeks and in the summertime. Apart from that, I was it was a boarding situation in dormitories.
How did you feel about that, Barry? How did you feel when you went away to school and you learned you were going to be there and not be coming home except for holidays? And how did your parents deal with that?
I think in those days, parents did what they were told. You know, people listened to authority. No parent would tolerate that today. So I think they just put up with it. Because they were told that's how I was supposed to get an education. Remember, there were two of us there. I didn't really care for it much, to be honest with you. It was a rough and tumble place. I got used to it, you know, I did okay, you know, academically I did okay. That's the one thing about that school that was good, is the academic, academically it was a good program. And so I'm grateful for that. The teachers were pretty good. Some of the staff weren't great. It's hard to hire. We called them house mothers and house fathers. It's hard to hire people in a situation like that because they probably don't have a big budget for that kind of thing. And so the people that were looking after us when school was finished for the day was, they were a little rough around the edges. And when you're in a situation, in a dormitory situation, there is a lot of bullying and so on goes on. You have to learn to survive it. That's the takeaway from there. In a situation like that, you just knuckle down and survive the situation.
Well, I know I have done other interviews and talked to other blind people that have attended schools for the blind where they were involved and saw abusive situations from house mothers and dorm parents and so forth, and even teachers. Did you experience any of that while you were in the school for the blind?
No more than anybody else. It wasn't that bad, really. I think there were some kids that were genuinely abused. I wouldn't say I was really abused that much. It was just, they were just rough characters that took care of us. Half the time, they didn't last that long. You know, there was a lot of turnover in that staff. The teachers were mostly okay. One or two of them were a little rough on their, again, a bit rough on us. But I would say in general, I came out of it pretty lucky compared to some of the kids there.
Well, in hearing you talk, you really feel that you got the education academically that you needed to succeed in life. So tell me, is there one teacher that stands out in your mind that you have a lot of respect for that really made a great impression on your life while you were in school?
Well, I remember a very good math teacher that I had at the school for the blind. She was, they broke the mold, I think, when they brought her in, or when she was gone. She would do anything, move heaven and earth to get those kids through the math. I you wouldn't believe how hard she'd come in on weekends. Sometimes I've seen her stay after school and help the kids. She was pretty amazing. So I have to say that's one person that I think about now. And I often think, why didn't I listen to her more? You know, why didn't I take advantage of her willingness to help us? But of course, you know, we're young and eager to move forward. And so, I had another teacher after I left the school. I went to a mainstream school after that, because what happened was they had grade 13. They had 13 grades in Ontario in those days. And so in order to really truly graduate with a diploma, I had to do grade 12 again in Alberta to get what they thought was the equivalent of grade 13, even though there probably wasn't. And I met a teacher there who taught a course in computer. Well, the first one was just a general course on data processing. The second course was you actually learned how to code. And so he was responsible for launching my career, and I was quite, I really feel that he was special and made a huge difference. Teachers always, if they take the time, they can make a huge difference in people's lives.
Absolutely, and we'll touch on that difference that he made in just a few minutes. But right now, tell us, what type of activities or clubs did you play sport in school? What were you involved in during your school years?
not much of an athlete. I'm not much of an athlete, really. So we had a regular gym program, and I was involved in it, but I wasn't, not in a huge way. I was interested in, when I was growing up, I was interested in things like ham radio. I actually got my ham license after I left school for the blind. I don't know that there was a lot of clubs. The last year I was there, I did make an awful lot of friends. And so I was out of the school for every weekend, for a good part of the weekend. And I'm grateful for the fact that I made those friends. They were wonderful.
Well, that is awesome. To be off campus is better than anything. What about any musical instrument? Were you involved in that, choir, anything like that, Barry, while you were in school?
They did have a music program. I'm not terribly talented. I played the violin a little bit and the cello, which I didn't like very much. The violin was okay, but the cello I just didn't care for much. You know, I thought I would try piano lessons, but of course I wasn't very good at. I'll never be very good with anything like that. So. There was a music program, and we did have a class in music appreciation that was part of the curriculum. So we, it was. I can say that I enjoyed it quite a bit. And toward the end of the time I was there, I taught myself how to play the drums a little bit, and I did a little bit of jamming with the kids and that kind of thing. So that was fun too. I feel like I know when I'm listening to someone who really knows how to play them.
Let's speak just briefly about your year in mainstream school. How different was that from the School for the Blind, and how did you fit in at that during that year?
Oh, really well. That was fun. There was so much choice. You know, especially the optionals, because I had extra time, and I joined a lot of. So they had a TV studio in the basement, and I got involved in messing around in there, because they had a performing arts program, and part of that was a TV studio. So I got involved in there in that a little bit, and as I say, my teacher friend who helped me with start my career.
And let's move to that. Barry, did you attend further education, or did you just have special training in the career that you chose? Tell us a little bit about that.
They had a program at the University of Manitoba. It was a one-year program run by a man named Don Keeping. And they placed a lot of people out of that program, and I was part of it. It was I went there in 1971-72, that year, and that was after I had met this teacher friend who taught me some. So I was prepared a little bit. I have to say though that the program didn't. After I left there and started work, I realized just how little I knew. It placed a lot of people, I would say, but it probably wasn't enough in terms of what you needed in that at that time to really really do well. I was a self learner, I kind of succeeded in spite of it, I think. I have to give them credit. It was there, and it placed people, and it was a good it was good in that respect. But probably the curriculum could have been a bit stronger. Probably it should have been a 2-year program.
And your high school's teacher put you into coding. So we're going to move on to your career. So tell us about your career in computers and coding and so forth, from the time you started working up until the time you retired. Fill us in those gaps, Barry.
Well, I started in the spring of 72. I was still living in Edmonton, but I had gone away to Winnipeg for the training in Manitoba. I came home and trying to decide what to do, how to start looking for a job. By that time, it was time to start looking, and I decided I'm going to go out to the coast because some of my family had already migrated there. So I went, and I was very lucky to fall into a good job when I got out there. It took me maybe two or three weeks after I landed there that I came out there with one or two suitcases and a couple of $100 to my name. And I think I went out there partly because I didn't want to, make it too easy to come back home. You know, I was going to be independent come hell or high water. So I lucked out that I was able to find this job. And actually, it was a counselor from the CNIB who was instrumental in helping me find the interview. And I owe him a debt to this day, a guy named Jim Collins. And he got me the interview, and I was able to get through it and be employed. They hired me as a trainee because they saw that I wasn't probably qualified the way a computer science grad would be, or even a technical school two-year program. So they hired me as a trainee, and thankfully I stuck.
So how long did you stay with them, and what was the name of the company, Barry?
That was BC Hydro, and I worked for them for... Actually, I worked... It was a strange situation. I was officially a Hydro employee till the late 80s, and then they privatized. BC Hydro is what they call a crown corporation. It's kind of half government and half not. What they do is it's set up as a corp, but the government is the shareholder. So you're sort of one step removed from the civil service, but it's kind of a little bit similar. But in the late 80s, there was a move to privatize us, and they did that. So after that, I worked for, a company was called Westech Information Systems, and I worked there till I retired, until Accenture came along to buy us out. Basically Hydro owned the company, but they really wanted to get rid of it, so they brought in Accenture with a 10-year contract, and I decided I didn't like the company that it was turning into. Accenture, not my cup of tea. They were Anderson Consulting, a wing of Arthur Anderson accounting firm. And I saw the way we'd work with projects with them, and I saw the way they treated their young kids, and I didn't like it. And so I had been there long enough that I could get a buyout, and I was happy to take it.
Awesome. And as you said, after your your training that you were not experienced, that you were self-taught, was it very difficult or a struggle for you, Barry, or was that something that just clicked with you and you picked it up quickly?
It was at times, I think. Just because I was adjusting to living, it was my first time ever living alone, living at home. I had an apartment, and I was a young man, and I liked to, as a young man, I liked to be out and about. I liked to party. I was a bit of a party animal when I was young, but I think I knew when to get serious, and I had to work at it a little bit, but eventually got there.
So what was your main job with the company up until you retired? Was it writing code programs? What was your main job?
Oh, it when I first started, there was a big difference between, there was a division. You had programmer analysts who were basically the coders. Sometimes they did a little bit, they'd work with the clients, especially if you're working in maintenance, maintaining existing systems. And then there were systems analysts who were the people who went out to the clients and when there was some new project, they would go out and meet the client and get the requirements and la da da. So as time went on, that divide I think narrowed. Toward the end of my career, I was actually going out to clients. I was actually dealing with them, and one big client that I had was. Hydro had a big fleet services department, and there was about 3,500 vehicles there, and I was their main contact person for a long time, and finally, the people out there were great. Toward the end of my career, in the last few years, I was going out there. Quite often, and often bringing back work. So it was fun to work with directly with the people and give them ideas and get their ideas and bring them back to the office and turn them into reality.
Well, you sound very enthusiastic when you talk about your career. So you do you feel like your career path was a fit for your life? And when it's all said and done, are you pleased with your accomplishments?
Well, yes, I'd say it was. I think I told you in our pre-interview kind of that I'm happy sitting down and working on. I can be happy sitting here coding a whole afternoon. Some people, it's not their cup of tea, and I understand that, but for me it was good. And career-wise, I would say I'm pretty lucky because it allowed me to have a lifestyle that I wouldn't have otherwise had, and allowed me to do what I'm doing now, which is looking after this site, and also... the little family that I take care of, that I'm with as well, allows me to help to kind of help out there too. So I'd say when you look at the number of blind people who are unemployed, it's the percentage is pretty high, 70-80%. I don't know, it can be, depends on who you talk to. It's hard to quantify because it's in some cases people are just underemployed, but it is a pretty rough ride for some people, and so I feel fortunate that I was able to have a lifestyle and an independence that an awful lot of people don't get.
Absolutely, Barry, and you've been truly blessed. And speaking of your little family, that's going to bring us up to my next question. Tell us a little bit about what you call your little family. I always smile when I hear you talk about them. So fill us in and give us some details about how you came to have the little family that you do.
Well, my nephew married a lady from Shanghai. She became a citizen, but the marriage didn't work out. When that marriage failed, I decided that we can't just leave those kids to suffer. They're two beautiful little girls. One is 8. One is 11. She'll be 12 next month. And I love them very much, and I just couldn't see letting them suffer in any way. So that's what this move to Edmonton was all about. Get a house that we could afford, give the kids a good life, and so I'm I'm lucky, I feel blessed that I'm able, was able to do that.
And as you get to heaven, you're going to receive a lot of crowns for that. It sounds like you love those little girls and that family a lot. And I am so in admiration for you and what you have done there. How do the girls like it there in Edmonton? And are you glad to be back in your home turf?
It's, well, we would have stayed if we could have afforded a house in out on the coast, but that wasn't going to happen, so that's why we came here. And the girls are doing fine. I'm happy. Sorry, that was Queenie.
No worries. Barry, let's change the subject here a little bit and talk about some kind of fun things. And this, not that none of this has been fun, but it's been very interesting. It tells me a little bit more about who Barry is. But we all want to know how old you were when you got your first kiss and where you were at and if you remember who it was.
I knew I was going to get that question, and I thought about it quite a bit, but I can't, to be honest with you, I cannot remember. It couldn't have been very memorable. I had, you know, I had several girlfriends along the way, but it couldn't have been terribly memorable because I don't remember.
That's just an excuse. You just don't want to tell us where you were at and exactly how young you were. How cute. All right, Barry, tell us, what hobbies do you have now? What are your main hobbies?
I like to read a lot, quite a lot. I've had different hobbies along the way. As I say, I used to be, back in my younger days, I was involved in radio. But then I lived in apartments all the time or condos, so I couldn't, where I couldn't put up a rig. Couldn't put up an antenna, so that kind of fell away. But I would say reading and learning. I'm a news hound, I would say. So I follow that pretty closely. I have, and of course, keeping up with my my former career, which is keeping up with all the new developments and so on. I probably spend a lot of time just learning about the new tech and how it works and how I can apply it. Actually, given that I'm managing a server here, something that it's good to keep up with.
Absolutely. Barry, tell us, if you could change one thing in your life, what would it be and why?
You know, I thought about that. And one of the things that your life is kind of like a, think of it like a jacket where there's a loose thread. You say, well, I don't like that loose thread, so you pull at it. So you pull it, and then all of a sudden, things start to come apart. And we never know, if we change something, we never know what those consequences would be or what the differences would be. If I hadn't gone to the school for the blind, I might... Timing might have been different. I might not have met the teacher in the mainstream school who taught me how to code. I might not have had the career I had. There's so many things that you know when you start saying what would you change. It's like pulling on a thread. You never know what the consequences will be. So I can't say that I thought about or really wish for the fact that I changed something, because I don't, experience, and you just let it happen to you.
Larry, if you could go anywhere in the world, travel anywhere, where would it be and why?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Yes, I think we got a little bit of breakup here because you were breaking up. If you could go anywhere in the world, where would it be and why?
I think the next, Europe is someplace I haven't been, at least the continent. I've been to the UK and Ireland, but never to the continental Europe. So I'd like to someday visit France or Germany. I've traveled a bit with the kids. We've been to Mexico. I've been to Mexico before that a few times. We've also been to Hawaii. But I've never been to continental Europe, and I wouldn't mind seeing Australia.
And speaking about traveling, do you have a bucket list? And if so, what are the top three things on it?
No bucket list right now, I'm afraid. My bucket list has one item, and that's making sure these kids grow up and are productive and are good citizens. And if I can make it there, I'll be happy.
All right, tell us, what is the one thing you remember getting in the most trouble for growing up?
Well, probably a lot of things. I got into trouble a little bit, of course, in Brantford in the School for the Blind. There were times that happened. But the one thing that stands out, and I don't know why it does, when I was about 5 or 6 years old, before I went to school, I used to wait for my dad. He drove a little panel truck, and he would bring it home at night. It was his work truck, but he'd bring it home at night, and he'd wait, and he'd go open the garage. Remember the old garage doors that didn't have any. They didn't have any, there wasn't a garage door opener. It wasn't motorized. In those days, you got out and you pushed the door up. So I would wait for him, and then I would sit. And then I remember one day I was fascinated with the way the gear shift worked in a car. And I remember, he was parked on a bit of a hill. The going into the garage, there was a bit of a slope there. Darned if I didn't change the gear shift. And the truck went rolling back, almost hit a telephone pole, and lucky it didn't wind up out on the road where I could have got killed. And I've never seen my dad. He wasn't violent. He didn't do anything. He wasn't the kind of guy that was got after us that way too often, but boy, he picked up a good size stick, and he chased me into the house, and he whack 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 all the way in. You know, it was I think he was genuinely frightened.
Well, I could understand. He was probably more concerned about you getting hurt than anything else, and that's probably why. What an interesting story. Barry, what do you feel is your biggest accomplishment in your life?
I think just this little family, I think is one of them. Has to be, you know. I would say also the. Probably what I was able to accomplish in my career was pretty important too.
Okay, and we're coming down to my last two questions, and I'm going to combine them, Barry, before we open it up to the members. What a very interesting life you have had, and a lot to be proud of, and especially what you're doing for your little family. Not many people would step up to that plate and take that on. And kudos for you for that, and God bless you for that. My last two questions. I know that you're webmaster for VIP. Tell us a little bit about how that came into play. And my last question, which will combine the two, is when did you become part of VIP and how does VIP impact your life?
I was a founder. There were seven of us. Some of them are in this room here today. Most of them are in this room here today. I was one of the founders in 2005, and I had actually worked with For the People site as well. So we founded this site in 2005, I built the site from scratch. This place is I tried to make it different from a lot of websites that you see around. It's all data driven, so that what that means is that people other than myself can do the administration. All the content you see comes from that database, and I have to say that it's worked out well because the people that I work with, people like Terry and Parker and people who do a lot of the heavy lifting, they've made this place work. I've built the tools. But really, I don't do much of the day-to-day admin other than think about what can we do to improve the site for example, we're going to be changing servers here in a short while. So if there's something that they can't manage, they'll come to me and we'll thrash it out. So yeah, I've been here from the beginning.
And I know that you are a big participant in our church services every Sunday, and you usually provide the scripture for Parker, and we so appreciate that so very much in order to have God's word. So if you had to say just in a few words of, other than being webmaster, how does VIP affect your life? Does it change anything in your daily existence?
Oh, it's the friendship and the people that are on here. It's good to have a community, and also good to know that the work that I'm doing is affecting their lives. I know there's people who count on us to keep going, and that's what keeps me going. That I've been a volunteer all my life for different causes. For 5 years in a row, for example, I volunteered at what's called a SCORE camp. It was the Gretzky SCORE camp for teenagers, it started out as a computer camp. I think it's morphed into something else now, if it's even still running. But I did that for 5 years, in five summers, where I gave up a month of my holidays to go out and visit and try to help out. I also volunteered for other things too. In my younger life, I had a computer braille project going that I was involved in, where I was I was building some software to create braille out of print. So there's a lot of volunteering has just been a way of life, and I believe that volunteering is you get more from it than you put in usually, and you usually meet some of the best people you're ever going to meet.
I agree with you 100%. Barry, again, thank you so very much for agreeing to be October's VIP of the month. I have so enjoyed interviewing you and getting to know you a little bit better. And now I'm going to open up the floor to the members to ask you some questions. And remember, guys and gals, one at a time, key up and ask your question and let Barry answer before the next one queues up. So first question for Barry.
Yeah, Barry, very interesting interview. And obviously, you've had a very active career for so long. And now that you're retired, what kind of things do you do? What does your day consist of? In the way of fun things to do, I know you're still doing your coding work and that kind of thing. But I mean, other than that, and tell us what kind of reading material you like. Do you read fiction, nonfiction, or what kind of material do you read in the way of books?
Well, my day starts at 6:30 or so in the morning, where I get up to see the girls off, and we have breakfast together. It's been fun. Fun things. It's varied over the years. I haven't stuck with one. I can't say there's one thing that I do that's really different. That really has. I would say that. I would say reading. I do a lot of reading. I enjoy it. I love it. As I say, I'm a bit of a news hound, so I enjoy sports. I'm kind of a hockey fan, so I probably take in a lot of hockey games. Today, that's about it.
Barry, this was a very interesting and informative interview. I've been looking forward to it. My question is kind of following the line of the websites. How did you become interested in being webmaster for these websites? Did somebody approach you with the idea, or how did that actually transpire?
Well, I was approached, and I was happy to take it up. This site here, we seven of us got together and decided that we wanted a site. But the further people, they approached me, and I said, yeah, I'm happy to do it because I could see that it was a great cause, and I could see that, and I knew that I had the skills to pull it off. So yeah, it was kind of a challenge, kind of an interesting challenge. But this site here, it was a little bit different because we just seven of us got together and formed it, and we were lucky to have the founders that we had. They're all great people.
Next question.
Yeah, who were the original seven, Barry? I can think of about four or five, but I don't think I have all seven. What are the names of the seven founders of the site?
Well, there was Becky is here today. She's one of them. Terry is here today. He's another one. Clifford Wilson. Who helped us a lot because he helped us form the corporate side of things and helped us get put together some of the documentation that we needed. And Anita, you're here today, and you were one of the founders, I remember. Dennis, who's not here, but I'm still in touch with him a little bit. He still helps us with our football challenge. I'm trying to think who else was there. Parker. Oh, of course. How could I forget Parker? Parker was the that's six besides myself. So, as I say, a really fine group of people.
Thanks. I just wanted to give them credit and acknowledge what they've done and accomplished over the years.
Do we have another question for Barry?
Barry, this is Els here. I've known your name, Barry Jennings, for a long time, and you do a super, super job maintaining this site, and we all appreciate that. My question is, are you a cane user, or you have ever had a guide dog? I know you do a lot of traveling in Europe and so on.
Cane user. Today, I had one guide dog for 8 years, and she was probably one of the best friends I've ever had. I still think about her all the time. I still think about her, and she was missed. I never went back. I just, you know, when you live by yourself, we lived in a townhouse at the time, and it was a good setup, and we did. She was probably one of the best. I'm a little biased here, I know, but I think one of the best working dogs that I've ever seen. She could thread me through a crowd of people with ease. So yeah, one dog, and wonderful experience. And but other than that, it's been all Kane.
Next question for Barry.
Yeah, what the guide school did you get your dog from, Barry?
Guide Dogs for the Blind.
Anyone else have a question? Barry, again, let me thank you so much for agreeing to be VIP for the month of October, and I really appreciate you sharing your evening 24. With us and your life with us, and it has been a pleasure to spend this time with you. As I always end my interviews, I always end the interview with a selection of a song from our VIP, and we're going to end the interview with this song selected by Barry, which gives you a little in look into the type of music that he likes, and he is into rock and roll. But first, let me tell you to put on your calendar for November 25th, 2019, our VIP of the month is going to be our own Nancy. I'm going to kill this. Nancy Rasmussen. And I probably killed that Nancy, so sorry. Our own Nan is going to be the VIP of the month of November. So put November 25th on your calendar. That's the Monday before Thanksgiving. And we'll all get to learn all about Nan's life. And so with that, again, we're going to end the interview here. Again, Barry, thank you so much. And it was a pleasure.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed doing this. And I chose this. I chose the song because, as some of you know, Ginger Baker, who was, I think, one of the best, maybe the best rock drummer that ever played. Although he would scoff if you told him that he was a rock drummer, because he came sort of out of jazz as well. But Ginger Baker passed away about 2-3 weeks ago. It was during this month, I know, and so I chose the one I chose.
The station. Black roof country, no gold pavements, tired starlings. Silver horses ran down moonbeams in your dark eyes. Platform ticket, restless diesels, goodbye windows. I walked into such a sad time at the station. As I walked out, felt my own need just beginning.
sadness in the hard crowd. Tired starling, I'll sleep in this place with the lonely crowd, lie in the dark where the shadows run from themselves.
Thank you, everyone. Till next month, November 25th. Good night and God bless.
This has been a presentation of VIP Conduit.